a multi-year Cy Young candidate, a veteran franchise legend, and the next big thing out of Japan could all be future Diamondbacks? We're talking off-season trade targets and more right now on the T-Backs podcast.
Perdomo makes the play.
And a high fly ball. No doubt about this. Corbin Marte.
They're going to send them all the way around. Corbin Carroll with an inside the park answer back.
I'm Ivan Melendez.
I'm Luis Gonzalez.
I'm Tori Lovello, and you're listening to the T-Backs podcast.
T-Backs podcast.
T-Backs podcast.
Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the T-Backs podcast, where we bring you all the hottest Arizona Diamondbacks tea and talk from across the pond here in London. We're proud to be Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast. And today, while some former Diamondbacks are battling it out in the ALCS, I've finally overcome my blues on missing out on the postseason. And I've got to thinking about one of the bigger questions on all Diamondbacks fans' minds right now. Now, it's not just spooky season, although I have gone full suburban mum with my pumpkin spice chai tea. It's also rebuild time. So who are the building blocks that Mike Hazen and Tori Lovello are going to be targeting? We already know that there'll be two main areas to focus on: pitching, obviously, and power bats that can play first base. And by most estimates, this will probably have to be accomplished on a budget of around $5 to $30 million, which is nothing to sniff at, sure, but it won't be landing the snakes much by way of MVP caliber. We're an organization that's done well with getting, you know, solid value out of the bargain bin before. So an example of that would be the Jock Peterson arrival, by example. Like, he came in 2023 as a very good example. People are thinking, oh, you know, he's played left field in his career, he's played first base, where's he going to go? And Jock Peterson, no, he was the DH. He was brought in to be a DH. That was the plan from the start. That's where he played, that's where he performed. And ultimately, you know, Jock Peterson was a guy who was involved in a good Diamondbacks team that performed very well, and he himself got a bigger contract out of that when he went back into free agency. Texas Rangers, I think, honestly vastly overpaid for him, and clearly that productivity dropped the moment he had that security when he was in their roster. So the Diamondbacks did exactly what they needed to do. They went into the bargain bin, they found a player and got the most out of him, and then he went elsewhere. And I think that's, you know, kind of what's going to happen a little bit more this offseason. So the Snakes do hold a couple of high value trade assets as well. So are we likely to see them used as well? I think, you know, some people are saying probably it's going to be the best outcome for somebody like Adrian Del Castillo. I'm going to talk a little bit more about him later. The other big name would be, of course, Jordan Lawler. And I think the lack of production at the plate from Jordan Lawler, who is ultimately Diamondbacks' top prospect, means he could be used as a very strong bargaining chip instead of being given yet another chance to see if he can catch up to major league pitching or he can hit anything close to major league off-speed stuff. And if you've been on Reddit lately, like I tend to be quite a lot, you will have seen several people saying that they expect to see Lawler dealt for, probably for some starting pitching. So before we take a look at some potential arrivals, let's just refresh on what the 2026 starting rotation come opening day currently looks like, because starting pitching is going to be, you know, an area to focus on. Obviously, following the departure of Merrill Kelly and Zach Gallen's impending free agency, right now, Snakes have four major league starting pitchers fit and healthy, since we can't count Corbin Burns in, of course, following Tommy John. And they are Ryan Nelson, Eduardo Rodriguez, Brandon Fart, and I think you have to put Christian Mayner in with that discussion as well. Nabil Chrismat elected free agency at the end of this past season, in case you missed it. So that number five spot in the rotation is currently up for grabs. Diamondbacks do have some solid pitching prospects in the system, who could probably factor in for that discussions of being that late relief slash long relief slash who knows what factor. Maybe they're in the conversation for starting spot number five come spring training. So you've got to say names like Yumin Lin, David Hagerman, Dan Egan, and Mitch Bratt. They're all likely going to see some action at spring camp, but I don't really think any of them are major league ready. We've seen a little bit of a regression from Yumin Lin this year. He's been hit a lot more than maybe we'd have expected. We'd like to have seen him kick on a little bit more at AAA after coming back from his military service in Taiwan. But we also did see, you know, when he was playing in the Premier World for Taiwan against Japan, that he's not afraid of the big leaguers. So I think we may see him at some point in the 2026 season, but I don't think he's going to be somebody that, you know, comes in immediately from the start and locks in a spot and we see him the whole on the roster the whole way through. I just don't think that's a possibility for him. And I know I'm one of the biggest Yu Min Lin Glazers out there when it comes to the Diamondbacks fandom, but I don't think he's quite ready yet. So let's look elsewhere. It does leave a gaping hole for a big to medium name arrival in that starting rotation to come in, hopefully stamp their authority towards, you know, the higher end of the rotation. And even if, you know, Merrill Kelly does re-sign out of free agency after the Texas Rangers missed out on a postseason berth, and he's said he'd like to do that, journalists are reporting that's very likely, probably going to get a 1 or 2 year contract right at the end of his career now. So I think Merrill, the mainstay, coming back would, you know, I'd be quite happy with that. Most people know I'm a big Merrill Kelly fan, so that would work for me. I think Zach Gallen, it's unlikely he accepts an extension. He's definitely not going to accept the qualifying offer that the Diamondbacks are going to give him. And it is kind of baseball's worst kept secret that he wants to head in a New York direction. So we do have to look elsewhere. And let's get into it. Who else is going to be an option? There's plenty of solid options in this year's free agency class of starters. Chris Sale coming up for 3.9 WAR season, although the Braves do hold a club option on him. Again, veteran pitching, do we really need to see that? And Diamondbacks, if we're bringing back Merrill Kelly, do we need another guy who's probably in his last year, maybe last 2 years of his career? Not sure. Likes of Shota Imanaga, Patrick Corbin, Zach Eflin, Ranger Suarez are all going to be options too. Suarez, he's an option I like, and I think I'm probably in the minority there, but a 4.7 WAR in 2025 at age 30, I think he still probably has some gas in the tank. He pitched a career high 157 innings this past year, so I think that's certainly not to sniff at. Patrick Corbin, of course, should the D-backs have the complete set of Major League Corbins, you know, got Corbin Carroll, got Corbin Burns, Patrick Corbin, that means we would have everyone called Corbin currently in Major League Baseball. I think that would be fun, but I don't think we should bring pitchers in just for the meme value as much as, you know, this show is entertainment, as much as it's like an actual discussion news show. I'm not sure that's going to be the best thing for the Diamondbacks. So Patrick Corbin, sorry, but you're out. But there is one guy who's more of a natural choice. I'm not the first person to report on this, but most online discourse has Chase Field as the natural landing spot for one Dylan Cease, who's 1 year, $13.75 million contract with the San Diego Padres will be expiring. He had a less than stellar year last year, despite posting a 1.1 WAR. His record was 8-12 with a 4.55 ERA across 32 starts. And this record, combined with San Diego's desperate need for salary relief, means that an extension is looking very unlikely for Cease over the likes of King or Darvish or Musgrove. His projected value is around the $135 million mark over 5 or 6 years, so that would be representing another splash in the Chase Field money pool for Ken Kendrick. But Cease is a known quantity in the division. He would effectively plug the Zach Gallen-sized hole in the rotation, in my opinion. They're not necessarily the most similar guys, but one, you'd be getting a guy with that traditional baseball mustache, which, you know, always good. We've been desperately lacking on that since Andrew Chafin departed the Diamondbacks. We always need to have that kind of like I'm trendy, cool, white guy, baseball mustache take. I think that's very much coming back into fashion. You know, I think Paul Skeens is getting involved there. I got George Kirby over on the Mariners as well. A couple other guys who I'm not remembering off the top of my head. Does Tariq Skubal have a mustache? Oh man, this is turning into that scene from The Office where they can't remember Stanley has a mustache. There's a lot of guys in Major League Baseball right now who have brought back that like traditional, like almost handlebar style mustache, and Dylan Cease is one of those guys. But he's also a fairly effective pitcher. I think bringing in somebody who's, you know, fairly well acclimatized to pitching in the NL West, so is used to like having to go on the road trips to Colorado a lot more than like maybe other teams do, would be good. I think he's got a bit of gas left in the tank. I think he's not quite super past it. Like, the Diamondbacks tend to always go for these veteran guys who don't have it. Like, we're still giving Madison Bumgarner some money. You know, we were, like, the landing spot way back when for a number of veteran pitchers. It's like, oh, it's the Arizona retirement home. I don't think Dylan Cease quite fits into that bracket yet. I think he's a guy we could, you know, sort of wring out a bit more from him and maybe dump him later down the line. But if he's going to get a multi-year contract for over $100 million, then I think alongside Corbin Burns, we'd maybe be hesitant to do that, but I don't think he would be a bad option by any stretch of the imagination. But going back to my earlier comments, there's no reason to believe that the Snakes are going to stop at just one starting arrival. And I also agree with the sentiment that we can't hold and hope with Jordan Lawler, especially with Perdomo turning into MVP candidate, likes of Blaze Alexander breaking out, and the effectiveness of utility guys like Ildemar Vargas that make infield spots really hard to come by. So, yeah, I think if Jordan were to be part of a trade package, it's worth considering where would he go and who would the Diamondbacks get in return. So, off the top of my head, one of the top starting pitching trade candidates at the past deadline was Mackenzie Gore of the Nationals, but they hardly need a new young shortstop to develop with, you know, somebody like CJ Abrams doing his thing. And while Edward Cabrera out of Miami could be an under-the-radar option, and there was, I believe there was a floated trade this morning online that caused some clicks where it was a floated trade, Sandy Alcantara for Ketel Marte out of Miami was something that was briefly mentioned on my feed, and I read it and I was like, yeah, that's not happening. So who knows, maybe Sandy Alcantara and might end up on the Diamondbacks radar, but Lawler doesn't strike as the kind of trade target that the Marlins are going to be looking for. They need established bats and they need bullpen help, and Lawler is neither of those things. Well, who knows, maybe Jordan Lawler could go on a career overhaul, become a relief pitcher, and all of a sudden freak everybody out, maybe become a two-way player. Who knows? I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think Miami are going to be looking at him, and I don't think that's a trade that's likely. But Sandy Alcantara, yeah, would be absolutely be a pitcher I would take in the Diamondbacks roster. But yeah, let's look further afield, though, from sandy beaches of Miami to a slightly chillier climate. And that's, of course, why I have my tea, if we're going to talk about chilly climates. There were plenty of eyes on Minnesota at the deadline, with one Joe Ryan looking an attractive candidate for a lot of teams. Twins kind of overhauled their entire team. They had a bigger fire sale than the Diamondbacks had. They had previously dealt away their star shortstop, Carlos Correa, and utility man Brooks Lee and AAA veteran Ryan Fitzgerald finished the season in the sixth hole for those guys. I think they might be tempted to take a look at rebuilding Jordan Lawler, who's really, it has been a disappointing run of form for him. It fits perfectly to a similar mid-market change of scenery. Diamondbacks, Twins, it's like kind of similar in the sense that like have potential to do a lot, but never quite get there quite a lot of the time. You say, oh, something going on at the Minnesota Twins. I will assume Byron Buxton has done something other than that. No idea. So, yeah, I think inevitably Lawler would end up breaking out and have a Rookie of the Year season or something like that, because that's just D-backs luck these days. But I would quite like to see maybe Jordan Lawler and maybe a couple of mid-level prospects, so maybe like a Dylan Ray go the other way and Joe Ryan come towards the Diamondbacks. I think that's a trade that could work out quite well for both parties. And I think, yeah, while I'd be happy with, you know, Diamondbacks pulling a team's pants down and getting a steal on some deals like we've done in the past, I'm not sure that's quite going to be our luck this time around. I think teams are going to be very aware of what the Diamondbacks are looking for and what we need, and they're not going to give us something for cheap unless we're really shrewd about it. We're not going to pull a money ball approach, because everybody's doing a money ball approach these days, so that's not going to be a method by which we're doing things differently to everybody else, so we're going to get that big improvement. I'm just not sure that's very likely. But just for the sake of variety, here's a few other names to keep in mind. Just let's have some fun with it. Adrian Hauser, Aaron Trevilli, likely going for the $20 million mark over 2 years. Cincinnati's Zach Little, likely a little bit pricier. He's a projected 3-year, $38 million if you're feeling a bit more spenny. But regardless of whoever ends up being a Snake starting pitcher this year, it will not matter unless they get some run support. And with both of the Diamondbacks' big power bats being dealt in the deadline fire sale, as the Mariners poach themselves Josh Naylor and Gino Suarez, there are spots open at the corners. And this is the big talking point of this episode, and that's really why I wanted to have some fun with it. Looks like Blaze Alexander's probably going to be a lock for third base with competition from the utility men, Tim Tower, Ildemar Vargas. The main debate on the diamond for the Snakes right now is at first, and I've got some absolute doozies to discuss on this one. Before we talk about big name signings, though, it's always going to be worth a look at who's already in the clubhouse. So despite everyone's best intentions, and including my talk about the MVP, the most valuable Paven, it seems that Paven Smith will remain part of the first base platoon. The other positional option, who we all know about, will be Tyler Locklear, who of course arrived as part of the trade deals with the Mariners, but he really struggled at the plate in his 31 games, and he's now had elbow and shoulder surgery. Yes, is expected to be back in rehab by the time spring training rolls around, but you know, doesn't inspire confidence based on what we've seen for him. I think there is some both mentality and like mechanics adjustments that need to happen there before you can really consider Tyler Locklear as like a everyday starting option. Utility to Superman Tim Tower can play at first. He can play everywhere probably. But given the nature of the position, there's some discussion about whether or not we might see someone like Adrian Del Castillo retrain from behind the plate as a catcher. The catcher to first base pathway is a fairly well-established one. You look at Ben Rice at the Yankees, for example. It's a well-established one in baseball, and ADC's bat is clearly good enough to be a major league level bat, whether or not that's as a platoon catcher or not, but he just doesn't command the area behind the plate. I personally am really hoping to see James McCann re-sign to be part of that unit alongside Gabby Moreno, which would again hinder Adrian Del Castillo's playing time there. We've seen obviously Jose Herrera has exited the organization now, so that third place catcher spot is up for grabs, but I think you need to get Adrian Del Castillo swinging more bats than not. And if he's not going to be used as a DH, which many of us are crying out for the start of the season, why not give him some reps at first in the Cactus League or something and, you know, see what happens? Oh, well, that's actually really good tea. Damn. Right. Ultimately, the story in-house isn't one that offers a natural and like super confidence-inspiring fit for the spot. So let's get into the fun bit of the episode. I've got three big name options for you, and let's start with the one on everybody's mind right now, Paul Goldschmidt. Everybody knows what Goldie means to Diamondbacks fans. He's on every single Mount Rushmore poll that you see on any format or social media. You see tons of his number 44 jerseys at games still, despite the fact he exited the organization. Got to be the old side of a decade ago at this point. And of course, mentions of the trade that sent him away still seem to upset the diehards. So surely, yeah, it'd be a natural fit to see the 7-time All-Star return to the desert for his career swan song, right? Like, obviously. Well, yes and no. While I can guarantee that there would be few people who would be happier to see Goldie return to Chase Field, and ultimately those purple Goldschmidt Serpientes jersey sales might end up paying for them all by himself, his productivity has dropped off since the golden days that we all crave and remember. He was widely replaced by the aforementioned Ben Rice in the Yankees lineups this year. And despite stating that, yeah, he's enjoyed mentoring the young utility guy, it's unlikely that the Yankees are going to see much value in paying his contract to not start more than a handful of games in pinstripes. The Diamondbacks, on the other hand, are desperate for something to kickstart the hype train for 2026. And Goldie would do just that. He would sell tickets by the bucket load. And we could definitely use that, like, lead-by-example mentor for the likes of Locklear looking into the future. A few paces, I think, would be better in terms of wringing out what batting power remains in Goldie's admittedly kind of aging body at this point than Arizona. Heat's always good for your joints, I've found. As somebody, I'm 25 years old, I've got back issues because I sit in a chair all day and sit on a computer and play video games. And, you know, I miss being back in Arizona because I just feel so much younger when I'm there, and I'm 25 years old, so I definitely shouldn't be saying that. But hey, Goldschmidt, on the other hand, managed a .274 average and 10 homers in New York last year. And I think a warmer climate could work some wonders there to kind of keep those numbers up, maybe show a little bit more improvement. It would also be, you know, obviously a very popular move. And if it ends up being one that makes the Diamondbacks more competitive as well, then I think that's a bonus, actually. Like, it would, if you're keeping the fans happy, you're giving fans a reason to show up in the ballpark, Why would you not take it? And ultimately, as we're about to find out, Goldie represents, I think, a slightly cheaper option, maybe, you know, a bit more of a stopgap while we develop some younger guys. So that's on that hand. Keep that in mind as we consider that he's not the only Yankee-turned-free agent that I have on the radar. After their dumping out of the postseason by the Blue Jays, duh, Yankees lose, There's been a number of opt-outs triggered in that pinstripe clubhouse. Both relievers in Luke Weaver and Devon Williams are going to hit the market, and I got to say, I would take both of those guys in Sedona Red right now for the bullpen. But it's $25 million projected man Cody Bellinger that has really turned my head. He has announced that he will take free agency, with the Yankees probably believing Spencer Jones is their starting MLB center fielder for 2026. He, of course, arrived from the Cubs in a big salary dump, and it was kind of no secret that he was a Diamondbacks target for a while, either rumored or, you know, maybe there's something a bit more solid there, either to fill in at center field while Jake McCarthy's big slump at the start of the year continued, or as a solution to the first base dilemma, or potentially even both of those roles. Now he's a free agent, I think that interest absolutely has to be reignited. The Diamondbacks are a team that sorely missed the gold glove defense of Christian Walker at first, so Cody Bellinger is a guy that makes a huge amount of sense as an acquisition. He's one of baseball's top defenders in the position. If you look at some stats, he accumulated 7 outs above average and 8 defensive runs saved between 3 outfield positions and first base. Added 13 steals in 15 attempts with a 4.9 FWAR, was tied with Carl Schwarber for 18th in the majors, and he was second on the Yankees behind only Aaron Judge. And having hit 29 homers, which is his best since 2019, to go with that, those are numbers that we want to see in a Diamondbacks jersey if we're going to make that difference between just missing out on the postseason and getting there either in a wild card spot or, you know, God willing, maybe challenge for, you know, a division. So that's numbers we have to consider. He is, however, going to come at a cost, and I'm not sure that paying $30 million plus on one player alone will be something Ken Kendrick is keen to do, given exactly how often that has blown up in the Diamondbacks' faces when it comes to late career options. Bellinger is 30, so not exactly an aging veteran like Goldie, but he will likely command a big, expensive multi-year contract, and that's where a player on the younger side of the big 3-0 would make much more sense. Enter the wildcard candidate then, a 25-year-old, 6'2", 213-pound lefty slugger who can play either corner of the infield and already a national team star, career 246 homers in 892 professional games, including a 2022 winning the Triple Crown. His name is Munetaka Murakami of the Yakult Swallows in the Japanese NPB, and he is expected to be posted to the majors this offseason. Now, hype is at an all-time high for this guy, with some publications putting him at commanding the $200 million over 12 years marker. That's likely going to result in something of a bidding war for his signature, and there's absolutely some agent work going on in there as well, absolutely. But he is described as being very career-wise by those reporting out of Japan. Obviously, both New York teams are going to be interested, they're big markets, but he is unlikely to dislodge Ben Rice in pinstripes, and of course Pete Alonso over at the Mets, despite being a free agent, I would expect to only sign with the Mets given the PR value of his cult status in white, orange, and blue for both sides. I don't think it would be a popular move if Pete Alonso signed elsewhere. Would I take Pete Alonso as a Diamondback, for example? Yeah, absolutely I would, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think, you know, he's not going to kind of up stakes and remove his whole family now at this stage of his career. I think he re-signs with the Mets. Other rumored teams for Murakami include the Phillies and the Dodgers, but again, if you were Murakami-san, would you really settle for rotating with Bryce Harper or Freddie Freeman instead of playing every day? Those regular at-bats are really crucial for adapting to MLB speed hitting, and while there's no shade on the NPB, MLB pitching is a different beast entirely, especially when you have a career above 28% strikeout rate. So a team where you can go and get those everyday at-bats, start every day, play every day in the major leagues, get used to it as quickly as possible with as much exposure therapy as you can, I think that makes a lot more sense. However, he is an expensive Japanese superstar, so putting my realistic hat on for a minute, I'm already preparing myself for him to sign with the Dodgers for an absurdly inflated and likely deferred figure. I'd love to see the Diamondbacks go and get one of these guys that drives some of that international sports tourism. Like, you go to Japan and everyone's talking about Shohei Ohtani. I went on the home run tour onto the West Coast, and I went to my first ever game at Dodger Stadium this past summer. We stayed in Little Tokyo in Los Angeles, and we were surrounded by Japanese people who had flown in specifically to see, like, Shohei Ohtani in one Dodgers game. You go to Dodger Stadium, it's 90% Japanese people who have come in to see Shohei Ohtani, and you go even to, say, a Dodgers series at Chase Field, where you get all the tax-dodging expats who now live in Arizona. They're only there to see Shohei Ohtani. They're the most casual of casual fans, and they're still outnumbered by international tourists who have come to see it. Like my football team, for example, who play in the second division of soccer, as you guys would call it, just signed a Korean player on loan from Tottenham, a guy called Yang Min-hyuk, and he has already got like thousands of people coming to second division English games to come see this guy play. That's the sort of market I would like to see the Diamondbacks try and explore a little bit more of, I think. When somebody like Heung-Min Lin or any other Taiwanese guys in our system break through, I think we're going to see a certain amount of that, and that's going to be so cool because Taiwan is like baseball mad, and I love to see it when you look at some of the stuff you see on social media. But I think going and getting one of like the big, exciting guys being posted from Japan, like I know Shutomaki is going to be posted sooner or later as well, but going and getting one of these guys, like the Diamondbacks were never really in much consideration for, you know, somebody like Roki Sasaki when there was that big drama about where was he going to end up before this season. No, of course he's going to the Dodgers. Before that, where's Ohtani going to go? Yeah, of course he's going to end up with the Dodgers because that's ultimately what's happening. The Japanese guys are probably going to go. They'll mention the Blue Jays. They'll mention, obviously, the Mariners out of respect for Ichiro, and they'll sign for the Dodgers. But I'd love to see the Diamondbacks actually go in and make a competitive offer. A guy is 25 years old. There's plenty of power to go and find at first base there. And ultimately, you could sign this guy to a $200 million contract over 10, 12 years. That's, you know, that's an entire career. Wouldn't that be amazing if a guy comes in, big international signing, and falls in love with Arizona the same way I have, the same way, you know, somebody like Eugenio Suarez did before we were forced to trade him, the same way that, like, loads of these guys absolutely love playing for the Diamondbacks, despite the fact we're not a team that's fighting for World Series and playoffs every single year. The culture that this organization, this clubhouse has, I think is something that's worth using as a selling point as an asset as well. Yeah, you want to come and develop. You need a place where you're not going to be overshadowed. You're going to be like a main man, but at the same time, there's not going to be all that hype depending on you because we have Corbin Carroll, we have Ketel Marte, we have guys who deliver in the big moments other than just one guy like some teams have. Then I think that's a very attractive offer to make to ultimately what is still a very young guy who's going to move to a new country where he's new language and make career and life-changing money. That's worth saying that, yeah, you can actually build a home here rather than just, you know, be a career guy. That's something I would like to see us say to Murakami or his agent or, you know, whoever's representing him in this whole process. I think the Diamondbacks have to go and make that case. Damn, that tea is sounding different today. Damn. Right. Out of these three, let's get back to talking baseball. Out of these three, and this is even without my nostalgia glasses on, I would say that Paul Goldschmidt probably makes the most sense. Even if we think of this as his curtain call year, that stopgap mentoring space in a season that could go any number of ways for the Snakes is a huge asset for the likes of Locklear or, you know, D-backs alumni Ivan Melendez, who probably aren't major league first basemen as it stands, but who both undoubtedly have the potential to surpass Pavin given the right guidance and opportunities. I also think that Goldie being the cheaper option means we'd have the budget we need to, you know, fill in the weak spots on the roster. Bullpen upgrades are also going to be essential, and while I'm sick of saying it, let's cover it anyway. Right now, the beleaguered pen is missing both of our big late-inning guys, AJ Puck and Justin Martinez, although the returns of Ryan Thompson and Andrew Solfrank, for example, have been welcome and very effective. One target that immediately comes to mind is reigniting interest like we had in the offseason with Kenley Jansen, who'd come at probably around $13 million per year, or around half that amount would get you his Angels teammate and iconic, in my opinion, former Diamondback Andrew Chafin. Getting somebody like Jalen Beeks in, of course, very effective Diamondbacks this year, back from free agency, that would be shrewd as well, but I would like to aim slightly higher. Sir Anthony Dominguez, for example, of the Blue Jays, would be, in my ever-so-humble opinion, a very good multi-year option. And while we are currently waiting to see how his season ends, of course, as I'm recording this, he's got an ERA of 3.1 and a 100% playoffs win record, exactly what this Diamondbacks pen needs. Of course, people will say to me in the comments, I already know, well, Benji, what's the point of going and getting a guy with a 100% playoff record if the Diamondbacks never in the playoffs? Well, same reason. I would rather have somebody who can deliver in that situation than, you know, have a out of nowhere incredible year for the franchise and then suddenly have nobody with any postseason pitching experience beyond the guys whose only experience of that is losing in the World Series to the Texas Rangers and not really being able to do very much. I think that that's exactly what the Diamondbacks pen rebuild needs. We need experience of, you know, that business end of the season, September, October baseball, delivering, winning, locking down games, giving up very few or no earned runs whatsoever. That's what we need, and I don't think we're going to be able to go and trade for somebody like Aroldis Chapman, so Sorrento Dominguez makes sense to me. If you're feeling a little bit riskier, for example, and I've already, in fear of reigniting 2023 World Series loss flashbacks, there is a name I've seen a couple of people mention, Jose Leclerc. He's rebuilding his career with the A's right now after injury, and he has a lot more experience at the major league level than most of our bullpen depth right now. I'm a little less sure about that one, given that we signed somebody with a lot of major league experience rebuilding their career after injury this year. That was, of course, Kendall Graveman, and that was just a colossal failure on an organizational level. That was an experiment that just did not work. But there are other names entering free agency as well. It includes 2024 All-Star Matt Strom, posted a 2.0 WAR and a 2.74 ERA this year out of the pen for the Phillies. The renegade himself, David Bednar, it was a late trade from the Pirates to the Yankees, put up a 2.37 ERA on the year and a 6-5 record, I think, in 64 games as a late inning guy. And I see Bednar as a particularly interesting option, given that the Yankees are likely to clean house, especially in the pen this year, and his numbers are pretty good despite a relatively small sample size. So there's some value to be found there, and maybe, just maybe, the Diamondbacks' pen could be a strength next year instead of a crippling weakness. I think it's that bargain bin philosophy that the Diamondbacks are going to have to go back to, and while it doesn't always fill me with, you know, excitement and awe for who the Diamondbacks are going to go and get, like, I don't think we're going to see the same thing we saw last offseason where we just blew everybody out the water and went and said, you know what, yeah, we have the money. Let's get the best free agent available from last offseason, Corbin Burns. No, he's a Diamondback now. We're not going to see that, I don't think, this year, unless Ken Kendrick's like, well, we almost got there this year despite not having anybody. Imagine if we had the tools to do X, Y, and Z because we've had terrible injury luck. I think that's just like a good summary of our fan base of imagine if this didn't happen. So imagine if we didn't have to trade all of our best power bats. Imagine if Justin Martinez didn't get injured 2 months into this year. Imagine if Corbin Burns had been our ace starter all year round. I think that would be very cool, and I would love to see a Diamondback season where that happens, because we were an underdog when we went to the World Series in 2023, and I don't think we're going to have the same kind of underdog status. Teams know that we have a lot of really effective bats. Teams are careful of that now. You've seen Ketel Marte with a good amount of intentional walks this year because teams have figured out that actually there are ways to beat us, and the ways to beat us is to shut down those kinds of bats. So we're not going to be surprising anybody anymore by going and getting a guy and like, wow, how did the Diamondbacks do that? No, people know that we have the financial punching power. People know that we will go and spend that money if we have to, which ultimately means that we're just going to be another team that gets thrown into, you know, names in the bidding wars for the likes of Munetaka Murakami. They can say, oh, the Blue Jays are going to give you this. Oh, well, the Yankees are going to give you that. And ultimately, you'll still go to the Dodgers. But, you know, I think that states a lot about where we are as an organization, that actually, you know, we can be considered contenders if things go our way. And it's a big if. But, hey, who knows? Who do you think the Diamondbacks should be going after this offseason? Is Goldie past it? Or would you rather see us blow all the big bucks on Munetaka Murakami from Japan, who's, you know, ultimately at a major league level, he's an unknown quantity. Have you seen him play? Did you watch him in Japan Pinstripes? Do you know what he's like for the Samurai Blue? Let me know in the comments. And of course, thank you very much for listening and watching wherever it is that you're tuning in from. And please remember to subscribe or follow or like or do whatever it is you did on whatever platform you are currently on. And please remember to join us next time where we are going to be talking all things Arizona Fall Leagues. Thanks very much, and I'll see you on the next one. Goodbye.